Hi, my friends. Welcome back. I'm sorry. I apologize. I just cannot. Maybe it's just because the way they used to play songs back then, that thing's drilled into my head, that song. I love that song. I didn't know what it was talking about at the time because I was only a kid. But it brings back some memories, and I don't know. It's kind of a Valentine's Day song. Please welcome our next guest. LI News Newsmaker Line is Jacqueline Newman, who's a well-regarded a divorce attorney and in prenuptial agreements and so forth. Jacqueline, welcome aboard. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fabulous. What do I always say? I don't deserve to be as happy as I am. Let's put it that way. And I actually owe it all to my wife. 99%
of
it.
Well,
I'm telling you, if you're able to get that down, guys, I say this all the time, then everything else just flows properly. That's my advice. But it took me a long time to find that, though. I mean, I didn't get married until I was 37 or 38.
Oh, all right. So well, I guess it was worth the wait.
Oh, absolutely. Well, she always complained. We dated for 5 years. She's like, well, it didn't need to take that long. I said, you don't understand men. You gotta, if it didn't happen at the time it happened and I made my decision and so forth, then maybe I would have been aggravated. But, you know, I said everything was done at timing. Timing's everything, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
But anyway, Jacqueline, I appreciate you being with us. It's, I call it Valentine's Day week because I don't like to limit, the day that we appreciate, our spouses to one single calendar day. I told my audience I don't expect you to do the whole year like I do, but let's at least extend it to a week. Now what's kind of interesting, and I was reading some of the, I mean, you've been all over the press. I mean, you like, marital law, you like, domestic relations. Isn't that what they call it in law school? It's been a while since I've been in law school, so I forgot what they called the.
They do call it domestic relations. Yeah, no, I love it. It's something I've wanted to do from the very beginning, and luckily, it all worked out.
I have to admit, studying the law, that was the most interesting to me because all the case law, it was almost like reading a novel. You know, it was reading about, you know, people's relationships and how they went sour and so forth. Now you say when you say you wanted to be an attorney, is this specific practice is what you wanted to get into?
It actually is. Yeah. And I've wanted to be actually a divorce attorney since probably junior high. I'm one of the very rare situations. But yeah.
Now, are you a banana split family?
I'm not actually. That's kind of the interesting thing. There's actually no divorce in my family. And I went to a tree to find out. And it was about six people removed from me. It was the first divorce in my whole, like, in my whole arena, which is odd. But the reason I wanted to get into it is my parents were both psychotherapists. And
oh.
The big family joke was that I was too aggressive to be a therapist. That's the best thing.
Oh, that's pretty good. How about your friends? Like when I don't know your age. I don't know what generation you grew up in. But did you find like a lot of your friends' parents were getting divorced at the time? Or
you know, there were a ton. No, I mean, I had, you know, one very, very good friend whose parents got divorced, but they were best friends. So growing up, I kind of thought, well, if the parents get divorced, they'll obviously be best friends. And I now see that's not necessarily always the case.
You know, what was sad is when I raised our daughter, it seemed like a month would not go by. Well, you know, I might be exaggerating a little bit, but, you know, a month or two wouldn't go by when she'd come in and say, you're never going to believe who's getting a divorce. And it's just sometimes the most unlikely, sometimes maybe more likely, but it just seemed like parents were getting divorced. I mean, back when I grew up in the 60s and 70s and you know, early 80s, you know, you just didn't hear of it. And maybe it's the parochial school, you know, upbringing and stuff I went to, but you see, it was uncommon. Today it seems to be more common.
Yeah, well, divorce rates have definitely increased as time's gone on, and they've hit the 50% rate. So the odds are, if you're sitting next to two people, odds are one of them's going down.
Oh, that's a shame, isn't it?
Well, you know, the way I look at it is that I help people get to better places in their lives where they're in healthier relationships. So, you know, they've done a lot of studies and they've said, you know, even with children, that if you have two parents who are unhappy in a marriage, and especially if there's a lot of aggression or any kind of violence in the home, that a child's better off having two happy parents that are separated than two unhappy parents that are together.
Do you ever find yourself in a position of, or do you do this professionally, you don't do it at all, of trying to get trying to mend the wounds, or you don't even go down that road? You just...
No, I absolutely do. I mean, one of the first things I ask clients when they come into my office is, are you sure you want to get divorced? Mm. And if they hesitate in any way, I recommend that they go to therapy. It's too difficult of a process for somebody to go down unless they're totally sure that this is the way they have to go.
Well, did you, I don't even, you're in the city, right? You're in New York?
Yes. I'm in New York City, yes.
Did you catch this article in the New York Post the other day? I checked into the divorce hotel to check out of my marriage.
I didn't see that specific article, but I've heard of this divorce hotel.
Yeah, so. It's the Gideon Putnam Resort and Spa, yeah, upstate New York. And for $5,000, all package costs paid, $5,000, you go up with your spouse, you check in on Friday, and by the time you check out on Sunday, divorced.
Yeah, I mean, I think what they're doing is they're doing a mediation process. Mm-hmm. My guess is that either they're in some way interviewing these people to show that there's really not a lot that they're fighting about, so it's really a question of just, you know, ironing out some details and doing paperwork, or I don't think it's really going
to
work.
Right. How about prenuptials? I had a friend of mine who happens to be an attorney as well. This prenuptial was as big as an encyclopedia. It was huge. It was a little scary, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe he's a little too much on the attorney side. But it seemed like he covered every angle known to mankind. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, gee whiz, what's the woman thinking, you know? But if you look at the flip side of that, and it could work either way now. Do you find just as many men or women coming for divorce as men? In other words, the problem isn't necessarily the man. The problem may be the woman.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say that it's more one versus the other. And I can't think of seeing it that way for a long time. It's very, very equal handed.
You think a lot of it is because of, you know, women, often are either earning as much money or more money than the husband. Is that a factor?
I think that's a contributing factor. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that now women are not as financially dependent on men, so therefore they feel freer to get divorced.
Right.
I think you're also dealing, there's been a lot of changes in the law that have protected women more so than in the past. So I think that empowers women to get out of marriages if they feel that they need to.
Well, the scary thought is, Jacqueline, in my opinion, is let's say you're working on your business, whether it's male or female. You're working up your business, a law firm, whatever it is, and it ends up being like a multi-million dollar business. You got a huge, you know, financial real estate portfolio or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, you get married, and then, 3-5 years later, it goes sour. And then, you know, the old art, you know, she gets 50%, or let's flip it. You know, the male might get, the spouse gets 50%. Wait a minute. I want to protect my, it's not that I don't love you. It must be a very difficult, discussion. It never entered my mind, but it enters people's minds, and I can understand it.
Right. Well, first of all, businesses now don't actually get split 50%. So now the percentages have gone down drastically. So there is some protection on that, but in what line of what you're saying, I agree with you, and that's one of the major reasons when people do get prenups is usually because they do own their own business and they want to protect it.
Right, and I think that's understandable. It's reasonable. If that's something you get involved with as well, right?
Yeah, no, I do. Prenups are one of the largest pieces of my practice.
Now, one of the clips I saw, it mentioned that Valentine's Day may be an occasion of sweethearts to exchange gifts, but it has increasingly become a time for divorce, according to a new study. Is that true?
I think that is true. There are a few times of the year that you really see some spikes. And after Valentine's Day definitely is one. And I think the reasons, vary. I think on one hand, you have people that really want to do it in January, and that's usually a really big month. They call January divorce month. And then they just don't kind of get around to it.
So you think it might have anything to do with taxes?
I think it can have to do with bonuses. I think that a lot of on the Wall Street bonuses don't usually come out until around February.
Wow.
So I think a lot of people hold on for that. I think the cold weather doesn't help. I think if you're not getting along and you're stuck in a house longer than you want to be, that doesn't help anything.
Oh, geez.
And then if there's any kind of infidelity going on, I think people get caught a lot on Valentine's Day because you're trying to appease your mistress or just your other significant other.
What is the guy called anyway? You know, a mistress is called a mistress.
I don't know, because as I just said that, I'm thinking to myself, what would be the counteractive? I don't know. That's why I went with the other significant other.
Well, did you hear, you might have caught this in the New York Post, judge allows millionaire's mistress to tweet about affair. This is the millionaire Robert Rosenkrantz. He's the CEO of Delphi Financial, big millionaire. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he was engaged in this this affair with this woman, and now the judge is allowing the woman, the mistress, to tweet out about the affair. Apparently, she's written a book. It's an interesting story here, and now the wife and the husband, they want to reconcile. They're going to work out through their relationship. And at the end of the story here, it says a confidentiality agreement was signed by the mistress, along with the guy Rosenkrantz, barring her from publishing anything about Rosenkrantz. Mm-hmm. And apparently he paid her $100,000 for that, you know, for that confidentiality agreement. You ever seen anything like that?
I have seen things like that. Yeah. I mean, we deal a lot with the high net worth, and I definitely have seen on many occasions where people want confidentiality clauses.
What happens if somebody comes in for a divorce, Jacqueline? And folks, if you're just joining us, family attorney Jacqueline Newman, is with us. She practices family law. She's with the firm Berkman. Is it Bodger?
Botker.
Botker? Newman, yep. And Rod in New York City. What happens if, you come in, let's say your husband's a millionaire or whatnot, or the wife's let's just say traditionally the husband's the millionaire.
Okay.
You'd be in a predicament because there's no way you're going to be able to hire an attorney. Or the resources that an assume the attorney might be very well skilled, but the attorney that and the law firm that he could hire, being that he's the multimillionaire, and you're the wife who's got no money other than the shared money, how do you even the playing field, if you will, if there is a way.
That's exactly the phrase. It is even the playing field, and there is lots of law that talks about how the moneyed spouse will have to pay the non-moneyed spouse's legal fees to exactly that, even, you know, level the playing field. So you can't be in a situation where, you know, your spouse is not, because your spouse is wealthier, that you cannot hire competent counsel.
Now, what if it's clearly because somebody else made a huge mistake, for example, infidelity? Mm-hmm. You know, is that, for example, if I'm the millionaire and my wife goes and cheats on me, and it's like, listen, you know, I don't trust you. I don't believe you. I don't want to live with you in my house. You know, get out. And yet, all right, I'm getting out, but, you know, I'm going to take 50%. It's like, no, yeah. Wait a minute. You intentionally became, you know, the wrongdoer. You know, you had an opportunity to get out of the marriage beforehand, not marry me, but you decided to ruin this marriage. It was all due to your fault. I mean, let's forget about, you know, I'm just assuming the guy's not a psychopath or anything.
Right,
just,
right.
You know what I'm saying? So, in that case, it's like the guy's still stuck. The guy's got to pay for her legal counsel, has to pay for the attorney and so forth.
Yep.
Now, can your prenuptial agreement, avoid that kind of stuff or no?
You mean address
it? Yeah. Yeah.
You know, people sometimes want to have it. I am not a proponent of it. I don't know if it would ultimately be, you know, held up anyway.
Yeah, it might be illegal.
How are you going to define it? That's usually my line to my clients. I say, you tell me how to define infidelity, and I'll try to draft something. Because some people will say an emotional affair is more, you know, more dangerous than a physical affair. You also have situations, you know, define exactly what you're talking about. Because, you know, not to get too much into this, but, you know, if you think about what is actually an affair, is it going to be a Clinton-type situation? What are we really looking at? And I am a big proponent of not putting in language that I don't think would hold up in a court. Right.
It would seem to me that video cameras today, I mean, with now you can have a video camera in a, you know, it doesn't take James Bond to have a video camera in your pen. I mean,
right.
Today, because, you know, I've heard some stories. They just absolutely disgust me to no end. Some of the, I mean, real psychological abuse that some women have to put up with, and physical abuse that just makes my skin crawl, quite frankly. Do a lot of your clients come in with video, video or audio? Is audio good? Is audio acceptable in court?
Well, I mean, I'll first just tell you that judges generally do not like video and audio. They do not like you bringing in tapes and trying to play them for a court. And this is all really only relevant. Like, fault, you know, New York is no longer a fault state. So the issues in regards to infidelity, the issues in regards to even emotional abuse, even physical abuse, really will not be considered by a court unless they are egregious. And it's, for something to be egregious, they have to shock the conscience of the court. And I can tell you from doing this for a long time, it takes a lot to shock the conscience of the court. They have very, very thick skin.
Hence the video, or hence the audio. I mean, it's, you know, I could see somebody coming in with such a story. It's like, no way. That is so off the wall. I'm telling you, it's true. Well, how are you going to prove it?
But a judge, I'm telling you, know, the problem is that unless there is, you know, the cases that I've seen where it's actually affected the asset distribution, or when someone got hired somebody to murder their spouse.
Oh, boy.
When there was an attempted murder case that was very popular and known where this man just really beat this woman in front of a child. It was disgusting and awful. He's in jail now. But that ultimately affected the asset distribution. I mean, it has to be so extreme. So a lot of the things that would make your and my skin crawl, the court is not going to consider in regards to asset distribution or anything. They may not like the person, but... You know, you really, to get that kind of information in, it's very, very difficult. The only time that it's much more relevant is in issues of custody. When you're dealing with children and things like that, if any of this kind of, you know, abuse took place in front of a child, it would be very relevant. But it really doesn't, you know, it happens a lot more on TV than it really does in the courtroom.
You know, I hate to say it, Jacqueline, you sound like you're in social work, to be honest with you. And my heart goes out to people who are social workers. But it's that revolving door thing I think about. And God bless you guys who do this stuff. I mean, and to see the kids, and I'll never forget, when I was in law school, they had to spend a week in family court just, you know, I don't know, just to witness
an internship.
And I'll tell you something. It was just, I'll never forget this. One judge stood up. He was so angry. His face was turning red. And he said something to the effect, he said, I'm sick and tired of you people using your kids as a, I don't know if he said goddamn, but he says, as a damn football. I'm tired. And they were just, and you know, it's just sad.
It's very sad. It is. And that's really, it's actually one of the reasons that I was attracted to this, even as a young child and always, is I like to think that I have some voice of authority with my clients and I can tell them not to use their children. And a lot of people, going through this process, it's so painful and it's so hard for them to separate the fact that someone could be a bad spouse but still a good parent.
Yeah.
Because you just feel so wronged in it. You just can't imagine. And it's hard to, like, it's really just hard to separate it. That's what it comes down to. So I see it as part of my job is to explain to somebody that there are two separate relationships here and you really need to protect and nurture the child-parent relationship, even if the spouse relationship is breaking up. So, yeah, I joke with my clients I'm the most expensive therapist.
You know, Jacqueline, you're doing great work. I'd say you're doing God's work, quite frankly, and I wish you the best of luck. If there's anything in the news, I hope we can reach out to you again, and maybe you can, you know, give us a legal analysis on it. You were a great guest, and I wish you the best, and a happy Valentine's Day to you, by the way.
Oh, well, happy Valentine's Day to you and your loving wife.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, very sweet. She seemed pretty sharp, too.